This is a free download from the BBC. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/podcasts.
Hello, hi, bonjour, guten tag, morning, afternoon, evening, good night, well done you. This is the Ian Lee podcast and I'm literally saluting you for downloading it. There are loads for you to get your hands on. So why don't you do what I like to do every once in a while, book a week off work, download them and listen to them whilst playing Grand Theft Auto 5. It's up to you, but do it. I'm only joking, but seriously though, do it. I'm only joking, but etc.
Across beds, hearts and bucks.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
The podcasts are fun. Sometimes I get to review the papers with Catherine Boyle off of the news. What have the other papers got?
Right, hang on, let's have a look at the other papers. The Independent's got a picture of Paloma Faith wearing tights. What's and she, shorts, which is apparently all right.
What's she banging
on
about now?
Sheen fabric tights. She's not saying anything. She's just been looked at a fashion show.
She's got very big gums, Paloma Faith.
And a lot of talent.
Hey, you've skipped past the Arctic Monkey. Now, he's been in the papers this weekend because apparently him and Susanna Reid, the hottie...
Right.
..from News, they were flirting during an interview.
Did you see flirting? I saw someone being really uncomfortable.
Who was uncomfortable?
She was, because she'd obviously been given this list of questions to ask someone she didn't really know what they did.
Yeah.
And she was... given some very uncool questions to ask.
Right.
And he seemed to have got a sus. That's what I saw. I didn't see any simmering sexual tensions.
Mm. Because the photograph they showed, it was her patting her hair, which, as we all know...
How dare she?
Well, that's a come-on, isn't it? That's basically saying, shall we?
I don't think that's permissible in a court of law.
Right, okay, good. I'll bear that in mind.
Just before we go there.
So who's stolen my son? Someone's stolen my son. Not my child, but my actual newspaper
Did
son.
Did you not bring it down? Is it in the loo?
I bet Dealey's got it.
I bet
Dealey's got it.
Again,
you're right.
I ask you, it's in the loo.
In the loo. Who would... It's always worrying when you're at someone's house and you see a newspaper in the loo.
I found a newspaper in the loo here once.
Oh.
And the crossword was half done.
Oh, gosh. I don't want to get too toilet based, but I'm in and out. I haven't got time for reading, for literature or anything.
Although I must admit that now I'm a mum, I do spend a little bit extra time in there sometimes. I'm not actually doing anything in there. I'm just having a bit of peace, a bit of space.
Do you have any books in the loo?
No.
Because people do, don't they? People have
I sometimes take a handheld device in
there. Oh, you mean like a phone or something?
Well, that's kind of wrong, isn't it?
Let's put this out there.
I wash my hands first.
Let's put this out there. There you go. Let's put this out there. And maybe Justin can speak to some people on this. Do you have books in your loo? Because I'm always... It's strange, isn't it, when you go into someone's toilet and they've got, like, a little library there for you.
And they're usually those comedy books that other people buy for you.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Awful.
You got me one of those ones.
What did I buy you?
One called Something London.
But that's not a comedy book. That's a good book. Hang on a second. That's SH Something T London. Is a brilliant book. And I didn't buy it to you.
I
got sent it for free.
It's been in your toilet.
Yes, it has.
Mine.
But are you saying you didn't like that present?
No, I did. But that's the sort of book you get in people's toilets.
Have you read it?
Yeah.
What's your favourite bit?
That's wary bit.
All right, let's do books in toilets. Does anybody? Where are you going?
Oh, can I not go now?
No. 084. Do this one of the serious papers to justify this. 08459 455 555. Is there anybody listening to this who still keeps books in toilets? When I was a youngster, my grandparents, my granddad was Scottish. He used to keep Ool Willy. Do you remember Ool Willy?
Yes.
They used to keep... I'm not doing that.
The Bruins.
Ool Willy.
You think you have to be Scottish to get that?
Yeah, I couldn't understand a word of it, but that was in the toilet, and I used to enjoy reading that. 08459 455 555. Does anybody keep books?
Andy Cap. That's what my grandparents are.
Andy Cap. Again, that wasn't funny, was it?
I didn't really get it.
Quick look at one of the serious newspapers.
This is quite an interesting one. Sheila Hancock says she burned all her diaries to spare her family after she wrote the book about her late husband, John Thor.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't want to hurt her family with the raw and angry emotion she felt at the time, so she's burnt her diaries.
Why would you even bother writing a diary? No one writes diaries.
Some people write them to get the feelings out, don't they? You know, sometimes if you want to remember something, you can't stop thinking about it, you put it on a piece of paper, it's gone. Well, you can do the same with...
Have you seen the advert for ITV Drama that's got John Thor in it?
Yes.
Oh, I don't like that. It makes me very uncomfortable. Not that uncomfortable, but it made me go, ooh. On that bombshell. Thanks, Catherine. Do you want to go and do some work?
Yeah, go on.
Toilet books.
Yes.
I didn't have... I've got a book, American book it is, called The Specialist, and it's about men who designs and makes earth toilets out in the sticks in America. And it's a damn funny book.
I think you've misunderstood that the phone-in is about books that you have in your toilet, not books about toilets.
No, but this is even better than that.
Is it kept in your...
You
is
could
it
sit and read that, and he would... You'd fall off the toilet. Yeah.
Do you keep this book in your toilet?
No, I don't.
Right, but again, Dennis, I can't allow this.
I'm sorry.
You've missed the phone-in. Let me just clarify for anybody listening who is unsure about this. I've got to get this accurate. The phone-in is specifically about books you keep in the toilet, not books about the toilet.
Well, the toilet is a contemplation place. You don't need books to go in there to contemplate.
Thank you. It was not necessarily contemplation, but yes, exactly. But some people do keep books in their toilet.
Yes, I know. Poor souls.
Yes. So, can you understand? Well, I've got to be cruel to be kind, to quote Nick Lowe.
Yes, quite. I can understand that perfectly.
I cannot allow your book into the hall of toilets.
I don't want to stir you up.
Would you do me a great favour, Dennis?
Yes, shut up.
No. For once, I'm going to ask you to carry on speaking. Would you apologise to the listeners for wasting their time?
Listeners, I'm not wasting your time. No. Go and get this book. You'll die laughing.
No, no.
You'll never go in the toilet again.
No. Goodbye, Dennis. He rings every day. Every day! It might as well be called the Dennis Lee Show or something. He called back in about an hour later, still going on about that flipping toilet book.
It is very, very funny. You read that, I'll tell you what, you'll fall off the toilet reading it. And you'll never go back in there again.
What book is it?
It's called The Specialist, and it's about an American toilet manufacturer. He makes earth toilets.
What?
An earth toilet.
What's an earth toilet?
One.
Dennis, can I just say to the listener, yes, we really are this short of content. Dennis, continue.
Right. It's like digging a hole in the garden and not watering in it afterwards.
Right. How can the man get a whole book out of digging a hole in the garden?
Because he tells you all the things that he does to it.
I don't want to know what he does to it.
For instance, people who spend too long in the toilet in this particular farm he's talking about. So he goes back with a pad saw and makes the hole squares and leaves the rough edges on the toilet seat. They don't stay in there very long. He always situates it, if this lady's in the farm, he situates it near the wood pile, so that a young lady going out to the toilet...
Piles?
And then somebody says, oh, she's going to the toilet. She doesn't. She walks past the toilet, picks up a load of wood and takes it back in the house. That way, the wood pile in the house is always full. The little things like that.
Yes.
And his greatest joy is to sit at the top of a hill, looking down a family four-holer, which it was four people in a row. That was his great...
Let me get this right. This gentleman's greatest joy is a family four-holer.
No, that he'd done it.
They were doing it.
He could sit and watch these people going in the toilet on his absolute perfect toilet.
So his idea of a good day was to sit on a hill watching people going to the toilet.
Yes, he's enjoying his work. He's enjoying his work, any builder would do.
But when the Polish lads came and put in a new toilet in my flat or my house I lived in, I didn't then invite them round to watch me christen it.
No, well, he didn't do that. He was very proud of
his work.
He
was being sneaky and was watching them on a hill with binoculars.
I'm sure that Polish lad stood outside your house and looked back and thought, I've done a damn good job there. I hope he enjoys it.
But again, Dennis, I cannot... Have you got the book there with you?
I haven't. I've been searching frantically for it since the phone.
Your missus has got rid of it.
No, she hasn't. But if I find it, I promise you, I'll send it to you.
Honestly, I don't know. You, please. I do not want to see it.
Why not?
But I cannot... We're talking about books...
In the toilet.
In toilets, not books about toilets.
Well, go and read the book about toilets in the toilet.
I don't want to. I want to forget about toilets when I'm in there.
Oh, dear.
And the phrase that stayed with me this week is, a family four-holer. You might be surprised to know that not everybody likes me or the show. Something about my attitude. I don't understand that, though, because I'm quite a nice guy. Very rarely do I lose my temper. I asked for coffee, not tea, you head. Sorry about that. Anyway, here's my attempt at winning a listener over, who, by the way, only listens because she can't turn her radio off. Justin, where on earth are you?
Hello, Ian, you alright?
What are you doing?
I'm out talking to dog owners. Morning, Shirley.
He wants to get...
Yeah, don't swear. Don't swear.
Who's that you're with?
No, don't swear.
What's Shirley saying? Who is this Shirley?
A lady has just come up to the car. I've got a Corsair. In the mornings, we go out in a branded vehicle.
Yeah.
And she's seen that it says BBC Three Counties Radio.
And she's a big fan of the show, is she?
Well, she's a fan of the radio station, but clearly not a fan of you. She says, tell him he needs to shut his... I think you can leave the rest to your imagination.
Well, can I speak to her? How come it's taking you an hour as well to get a vox pop about dogs?
Well, because there's not many dog owners about. Hold on a second.
Deary me.
You sure you want to speak to her?
Yeah, I'll speak to her. Just tell her to watch her tongue.
OK. Shirley, I've got Ian on the phone right now. Yeah. Let's have a very quick chat with you, OK? Now, if I'm going to pop you through, you're not going to swear, are you?
No, I don't swear.
I'm going to pop you through. This is Ian Lee, OK? Clearly you're a big fan of... OK, I'll put you on the phone to you now. Hold on.
Good morning, Shirley.
Hello.
Hello, Shirley. This is Ian Lee. You're live on BBC Three Counties Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, listen, we've got a beef between us. Let's sort it out. What's your problem with me?
I don't like your attitude.
What's wrong with my attitude?
You talk about yourself a bit too much.
OK. So you don't find my showbiz lifestyle interesting?
No.
OK. What would you like me to talk about more?
I don't know. I don't care.
Oh, but I want you, Shirley, I want you to care. I want you to care. I want to be able to start the show at 6 o'clock in the morning and know that Shirley's listening to me.
No, I'm sorry. I turn you down when you come on.
Do you turn me down or turn me off?
I don't know how to turn you off.
Ah, there we go. Well, that's something.
I've got a new car, you see, so I'm lumbered with you.
You can't... Oh, bless you. You can't turn the radio off in your car.
I don't know how to. It's a new one.
Okay, all right.
I don't like pressing buttons because I mess it all up.
You don't want to mess it up. Okay, let's try and find out. Who do you like on BBC Three Counties Radio? What about Jonathan Vernon Smith?
Yes, he's all right.
He talks about himself all the time, though.
No, he doesn't. He talks about his Pinot Grigio or whatever the blooming stuff is.
Okay, so you like JVS. He's good. What about Nick Coffer? Have you heard of Nick Coffer?
No, I don't listen to him.
Okay, okay.
Roberto... what's a Roberti Borelli, is it?
Roberti Borelli, yes.
Yeah, him. He's nice.
Do you like him? What about Chetan Partak?
No, don't listen to him.
Don't listen to him. What about Helen Lee at the weekends?
No.
What do you think about David...
The only time I've got my car radio on is when I'm on my way up the park.
Right.
From 6:30 till 8 o'clock.
Right, so that's me. 6:30 to 8 o'clock
is
me.
I can't get away from you, can I? No, when you're on holiday and we have Justin on.
Let's ask you the question. What do you think about Justin Dealey?
Smashing.
Do you not think he's a bit cheesy?
No.
A bit old-fashioned?
No, if I was 50 years younger, it'd be my boy.
Are you Justin's mum?
No.
Okay.
I don't have that pleasure.
No. Well, Shirley, listen, I'm going to work on making this show so that you like it.
Oh, that's nice of you.
I'm going to dedicate the rest of the show to you, Shirley.
Oh, thank you very much.
And so that you own this show. If at any point between now and 9 o'clock you don't like what you're hearing, phone us up and tell us and we'll change it immediately, I promise.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do for me.
Go on, Shirley.
If you like it a little bit more.
Yes.
Play El Martino's Spanish Eyes.
I'm going to play it now. Are you near your radio?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just about to walk my dog.
Walk your dog. I'll be playing it while you walk your dog, Shirley.
Have you?
I'm going to play it.
Have you? Play it on the Saturday morning at 9:30.
We've lost her. Shirley, it's lovely to talk to you and thank you for being
and
a good sport, my love. Take care.
And you bet to Justin.
Thank you. No, honestly, don't worry. Thank you, Shirley. Wasn't she delightful? One by one, I'll get them. One by one. Has she got a radio diary? No, not bothered. The man wrongly accused of the murder of Rachel Manning 13 years ago is now looking forward to getting compensation for the time he spent in prison. Well, Barry White from Milton Keynes has submitted a second claim to the Ministry of Justice via his lawyers. He spent 6 years in prison and has been out for about 5 years and has still not received any compensation. Well, earlier this month, another man was sentenced for 19-year-old Rachel's murder. We can talk now to the Conservative MP for Milton Keynes South, Ian Stewart. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
It is just the most incredible story, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I've been involved with this case for some time. Keith Hyatt, who was the other man wrongly imprisoned for this, is actually a close neighbour of mine. And I've been aware of the case and involved in it since 2005, so quite a few years now.
And Barry has been out, I think, for about 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm so naive in. I thought if you came out of prison after being found not guilty, they'd say, we're very, very sorry, here's a big cheque, do accept our apologies. But 5 years later, he's had the apology now, but he's still not received any money, has he?
He hasn't, neither is Keith, and it's long overdue that they are compensated. I'm working with them and their lawyer trying to get the compensation payment from the Ministry of Justice. Without going into the technical details, there was some evidence relating to the claim that couldn't be made public because of the other trial. But I think that the time it's taking is far too long. And once they've got their compensation arranged, I'm going to be asking for a review of the whole process because this sort of delay when you've got two men who are clearly innocent is just not acceptable.
Well, there have been huge delays in this because not only are the gentlemen still waiting for their compensation, but Barry spent 3 years in prison after the Rough Justice programme, which had all the evidence that he was innocent, was aired.
That's right. I mean, they've... You know, sometimes it does take a period of time for someone's innocence to be properly shown, and that's a separate matter for in terms of how the criminal justice system operates. But the delay that's not acceptable in my mind is when his conviction was quashed and he was cleared in a retrial. Then at that point, I believe that the due compensation should be paid.
Do we have any concept of what the compensation might be? 50,000, 100,000? What kind of figures might we be talking about?
It's going to be a substantial sum, given the length of time that these two men were imprisoned. You can never put a figure on these things to compensate for loss of liberty and all the other mental and physical strains that they would have gone through. What price do you put in that? But it's going to be a significant sum of money to allow them to get on with their lives.
Barry has struggled. He admitted that to me himself, that he turned to drugs when he was in prison, he's kind of pulling himself and straightening himself up, but he's had a tough time. Did the gentleman get psychological support?
Well, I know Keith more than I know Barry, and I know Keith's family have rallied around him, but it's put a huge stress on all of them. And as part of the review, I want to make sure that we do give proper counselling and support to people who have been falsely imprisoned. It's difficult for us to imagine just what it would be like to be sentenced to prison for a crime you didn't commit. The mental pressure must be intolerable.
And finally, just on the subject of compensation, Ian, how far down the line are we? When do we think they might receive something?
Well, I'm hoping it will be soon. A fresh application has been submitted to the Ministry of Justice, and I spoke to Chris Grayling, the Justice Section, the Justice Secretary, last week, and he assured me he's giving it his personal attention. So I'm hoping they'll get a resolution on this sooner rather than later.
Ian, thanks very much indeed. That's Conservative MP for Milton Keynes South, Ian Stewart. Well, I did speak to Barry White a few days ago, and he told me his incredible story.
Barry, it's very nice to meet you. You've been looking for compensation, haven't you, for the last 5 years? How's that going?
It's going all right. I mean, our solicitors are dealing with it, and I think we've put in our second claim for consideration now, and hopefully we should hear something soon, hopefully.
I'm kind of naive at this. I kind of thought, you go to prison, you get found out you're in prison for the wrong reason, that you'd come out and you would get a cheque and a big apology. It's not been anything like that, has it?
No. I've had an apology, but the cheque, we've been fighting it for 5 years. And for 5 years, they were like, well, we're not going to give you a compensation because we still think you might have done it.
Is that really what the implication they've made?
Yeah, we've got letters indoors saying that we're not giving you a compensation because, in our eyes, we still think you might have done this crime.
Even though the conviction was overturned and you were found not guilty?
Even though the conviction was overturned, yep.
How does that make you feel?
It's horrible. Horrible. I've been proven innocent. Now you're saying to me you still might think I've done it. How do you deal with that?
It's a horrific story. I can't even begin to imagine what you feel like. You lose your girlfriend in a horrific crime. You get blamed for it. You get arrested. You get sent to prison. as this story was progressing, how were you feeling?
That was horrible. The first year, 2 years, it was horrible in jail. I'd say I turned to drugs and just to get an escape route, just to put me where I'm not where I was at the time.
When the police arrested you for the murder, what did you think?
I was just in shock that they were arresting me and was questioning me for two or three days, and I was thinking that I never done this crime. I'm telling you the truth and you just don't seem to believe a word I say.
And that just must have been so frustrating. You're sat there telling the truth and all the coppers going, yeah, OK, son, yeah. Now come and tell us the real truth.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That's how it felt. Like they felt like they put me in the middle and just built the case around me, not built the case and went, well, this is the evidence, it proves it was you. They've just got me and said, right, it was you, let's build the case around it so it suits you.
Were you constantly thinking all the way through the arrest, all the way through the court case, when you started going to prison, were you thinking at some point someone is going to stand up and say, no, hang on a second, we've got the wrong fella?
Yep. All through my jail time, I thought they were going to come to my cell. I'll come and Barry, let you free to go. We found out you're innocent, you can go now.
What was prison like for you?
Oh, it's horrible. Absolutely horrible place. Hated every minute of it.
You say you turned to drugs. This was in prison,
yeah.
Was it? What drugs were you taking and how did they help?
Anything I can get my hands on, like prescription, illegal, anything. And it gave me an escape route. It made me not think of where I was. It took me from where I was at the time.
All the time this is going on, how are your family treating you? Did they know you were innocent or did they have suspicions? What were they thinking?
No, all my family knew I was innocent, every single one of them. They all straight away knew I was innocent. All my friends, because they knew what sort of person I actually was. Like, where the police and the media portrayed me as this horrible person, all my family and friends knew I wasn't that person that I'm being portrayed in the media or by the police.
Hi, love. We got people calling about love. You like it, don't you, love? You love it, love. Yeah? Nice. Oh, I dropped a pen. Could you bend over and pick it up for me, love? Thanks, Justin.
And that's your latest news and sports. I'll be back with more at 7 o'clock.
You're right, love?
Yeah. Oh.
You've just let down...
I've let the side down.
You've let the sisterhood down. Quickly, go and try and put that burning bra out and put it back on.
Can you say it again, then?
You're right, love.
How very dare you!
You're Northern... You're from up north, aren't you?
Yeah.
They all speak like that, don't they?
Well...
Oh.
Yeah, it depends where you go. In Salford, where my family's from, the term of endearment is cock. Right, cock?
Call 08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Well, the less said about that, the better, I think. What do you think? Are you offended by the word love? We spoke to Chris White a few minutes ago, the St Albans councillor. He's a Lib Dem. We're talking about sexism, and he expanded it to say that love was actually a pretty unpleasant word.
The word love, for instance, is something which is no longer tolerated, whereas 30 years ago it could be appropriate from a senior man to a junior woman.
I don't have a massive problem with love. But maybe I'm a 40-year-old man. I realise I'm now one of them. Let's go to Peter in Walmer Green. Peter, morning, love.
Good morning, love.
You got a problem with it?
No, not at all. There's a big difference there. I don't think that chap from St Albans really understood it.
Go on. Make it clear for him.
There's a condescending way of saying it and a greetings way of saying it.
Yeah.
And no one should be condescending to anybody.
Do both different ones. Do the condescending one to me and the greeting one.
It depends on the context of using the word.
Oh.
I mean, you go, say hello, how are you, and that sort of thing, and I say it quite often, but I don't do it in any condescending way whatsoever, because that's offensive.
The thing is, Peter, you sound like an older gentleman, and maybe times have changed. You know, in the 70s, it was all right to go up to a woman, pat her on the bum and say, well done, girl, good work, love. Now, going up and patting them on the bum is inappropriate. Maybe, the use of the word love is inappropriate now.
Well, I mean, times have changed. I mean, I went up to Moorfield recently and saw so many people walking around with cups of coffee. Now, if they're not going to pride in themselves by eating and drinking before they come out, what sort of people are they? That's what I thought.
Peter, good question there. Not quite sure. Let me just work out what the connection is between calling people love and having a cup of coffee in a hospital. Calling someone love, having a cup of coffee in a hospital, something to eat. Connection is... Joanne's in Harpenden. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning, Ian.
You've called in about the subject of being called love.
Yes, most mornings with my local workman, which I don't have a problem with at all. It actually just makes me smile, and, I don't have a problem.
Does it give you a warm, tingly feeling inside?
It just cheers me up. I don't see the problem at all with being called love. You know, I'm 41.
I was going to say, you sound like 20. Quite a young lady. 41 is, you know, is, well...
Careful.
I'm 40. We're reaching the boundaries. Although a woman in a shop called me a young man the other day. Oh, I loved it.
I do date a 30-year-old, so I'm kind of okay, I think.
Okay. So who is calling you, love?
The workman.
You're dead common, you
local,
are, aren't you?
Local school. but it does. They've been doing it for, I suppose, about 4 months now. keeping it clean.
Well, hang on a minute, Joanne. What are you wearing as you drop your daughter off at school? Mini skirts and boots?
I'm from Harpenden, Ian, no.
No, okay. So we had it mentioned earlier on by St Albans Lib Dem councillor that's actually bordering sexism. You disagree,
nonsense.
Would you?
Absolutely. Nonsense. No.
Joanne, nice to speak to you, love.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Hands up who's intrigued to know what other things the builders call her. Me. We found out what else the builders call her, and it was Foxy Mummy. Yeah. Foxy Mummy. I'm going to start a band called Foxy Mummy.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yes? So we're just talking about love.
Yeah, do you mind being called love, love?
So I do find it very patronising, I will be honest.
Why do you find it so patronising, my dear?
I don't know. I feel as though maybe they're putting themselves on a higher level than me, as in talking down to me.
Isn't it just a term of endearment, though?
So, again, I suppose I'm sitting on the fence, as in it depends who says it. If there's, you know, maybe if it was my family member, yes. But, for example, say if I go to the mechanics or I go to a petrol station and they always say, hello, love, it is quite patronising.
Isn't it, though, it's the same as if I call someone mate, isn't it? If I call Justin Dealey mate and then I call Catherine Boyle love, it's the same thing, isn't it?
I think it depends what you think of the word mate and the word love.
Would you find mate patronising?
Depends, again, who says it, yeah. I'm not a big fan.
Oh, Sarah, grumpy boots. Sarah, whereabouts are you from? I hear an accent. What accent is that?
New Zealand.
New Zealand, okay. And what's kind of the attitude towards sexism like in New Zealand? I'd imagine they're about 20 years behind us, aren't they? No disrespect.
They're quite laid back. I don't think people... Yeah.
What a lovely little giggle you've got, my darling.
Oh, I know, it's awful, isn't it?
And how old are you, Sarah?
I'm 26.
26, okay. So you're significantly younger than me. So if I called you love, if you came into BBC Three Counties to be interviewed about the culture of living in New Zealand, and you came and I said, yeah. All right, love, nice to meet you, you would take that as a bit patronising, wouldn't you, my dear?
I would, yeah. Even though I have got this silly little giggle, I know that kind of makes me sound like a little girl. Yes, no, I do find it quite patronising.
You have got a marvellous, cheeky little laugh that really does bring a smile to my face. So thank you so much for that, my darling.
That's no problem.
Thank you, Sarah. Justin, you're not a gamer, are you?
No, not at all.
You don't like it? Do you fancy coming around for a little session of the GTA?
Tell me why I'll be interested in stealing, killing, torturing. Why would I be interested in that?
Because that's not. You won't be killing, stealing or torturing. You'll be playing a video game.
But that's what they do in the video game.
Yeah, but you're not doing it. This is the problem, you see.
Go on.
You're not doing that. You're playing a video game. It's like watching a movie.
But why would I want to torture somebody on a video game? Okay. You're still torturing somebody.
No, you're not torturing anybody, Justin. Maybe I'm not saying this clear enough. Let me say it in words of less than two syllables for you to understand. You will not be torturing anybody. You will be interacting in a video game. It's like watching a movie.
No, it's not like watching a movie, because you're watching a movie, you're watching something in front of you, you're pressing the buttons on that computer, which is making the computer screen torture somebody, correct?
Incorrect, because it's not torturing anybody. It's just a series of numbers and dots on a screen. You are not torturing a real person.
Right. OK. Well,
well done. You lost the argument, so you backed away, and I appreciate that.
So
that's big of you.
Have you got the game yet?
I got sent it yesterday.
Ah, right, so you're going to be playing it later on. Well, I've been trying to find out this morning, Ian, why people like you like this game and why people don't like this game. Here's what people had to say.
You're a fan, aren't you, of these games?
Yes, very big fan, yeah.
Do you think they make you more violent?
No, not at all, no. No.
I mean, experts are saying they could do, but you've noticed no change in your behaviour or your friend's behaviour whatsoever?
No, not yet. Not yet. Not for the ones that have played it so
far.
What
do you get from this, though? You know, shooting people, torturing people. What do you get from it?
I think it's just, well, you can't do it in real life, so...
It's the fantasy, then?
Yeah, it's the fantasy, yeah.
My nephews have already got it.
So they're that keen, then?
They're that keen, yeah.
And how old are your nephews?
One's 18, one is 15.
And the one at 15 should be playing it anyway, should he?
Shouldn't be playing, and he's the one that's got it. It's the 18-year-old that got it for him. But I think that's, they've been talking about it for many weeks now. It's just, yeah, that game.
I mean, are you not concerned that your 15-year-old nephew will be playing this game, which features scenes of graphic violence and torture?
Yep. I mean, I hope he's not influenced by the game. But, I am worried. I was surprised when he showed me the picture. He's got it, so...
Charlie, you're 18, so legally you can play Grand Theft Auto. Have you rushed out to buy the new game yet?
I just got it yesterday after work.
You've already got it.
Yeah.
Is it too violent?
It is definitely an 18-plus game, yeah.
Zach, you don't play Grand Theft Auto. Can you tell me why?
Too much killing and not really any real story behind the game. It's just kind of do this and do that.
And what about friends of yours? Are they obsessed by this game?
A few of my friends did go out at midnight to purchase the game, and I don't think they've been into work since.
James, you've got two children.
Yeah.
Would you let them play Grand Theft Auto?
No.
And these parents that are buying these games for their children, knowing they're underage, do you think they're just naive?
I think some are naive, but I think some of it is basically pressure, because I know there's children that... I've spoken to parents myself whose children are actually badgering them to get this game.
You seen the film Scarface, Justin, with Al Pacino?
No, I haven't, no.
You seen The Godfather?
Yes, I have, a long time ago.
It's quite violent, isn't it?
It's very violent, yes.
Did it make you go out and be more violent?
No, it didn't.
Because you are a rational, thinking human being.
But I'm just saying that sometimes an influence... You know, you'd be shocked this morning, Ian, the amount of 14-year-old children that I've spoken to who have already got this game because their parents have gone out to buy it for them.
That is
bad. You've got to be 18 to play the game.
No, well, no, you haven't. You've got to be 18 to buy the game. You don't have to be 18 to play the game.
Is that right?
That's correct. But yes, that is bad parenting.
Hmm.
Definitely, I couldn't disagree with that. Have you found anybody this morning whose behaviour has been affected?
Well, yes, somebody's friend. This is very, very interesting. This is Jig. Just take a quick listen to this.
Jig, you're into these games as well. Sell it to me. What's so good about Grand Theft Auto?
I think people like it simply because you can just do whatever you want. You can just steal a car and not face so much consequences.
So the game takes you away from reality?
Yeah. It takes you into a place where you can just do whatever pleases you.
And the people that you've seen playing this game, have they changed as a person since they've been playing games like that?
Yeah, some people I know have changed completely, and not for the better either.
Can you tell us what you mean by that?
I knew a guy that was... I mean, me and him were close, and then one day he's like, oh, I'm just going to go steal a car. Do you want to come with me? I was like, no, I'm okay. He got caught, yeah.
And that was based purely on the video game?
Yeah.
So the experts that are saying this can have an influence... Based on your experience with your friends, no. That's absolutely true.
It is, yeah.
Right, so there's a bloke called Jig, who's... Mm-hmm. His mate played Grand Theft Auto, then he said, one day I'm going to go and steal a car, and he did.
Yeah, based on the computer games, he said.
Well, as Jig said, what evidence do we have... That young man stole a car based on a computer game. Justin, come on, you're one of my favourite reporters. Where's the evidence here?
Well, I'm only going on what he said to me. He said that since he started playing these video games, his close friend, his behaviour has changed, and he went out to steal a car because the video game you're talking about, that is not reality. That is fantasy.
Correct.
He took that fantasy out onto the streets when it became reality.
I assumed you asked questions as well about the young man's mental health, about other things going on in his life, about possible drug use, about breakdown in family, things like that, to get the whole picture.
I'm only going on what he's saying to me. He said to me the video game had an influence on his behaviour which made him go out and steal a car, and he got caught. That's what he said.
Mark Chapman shot John Lennon, I think five times. I think he fired six. I think only five of the bullets went into him after he'd read the book Catcher in the Rye.
Mm.
Should we ban books?
Look, with this video game, it is controversial. And I think, you know, it depends on what sort of person you are. Clearly, you play the game. It doesn't have an influence on you. But if you're talking about young teenagers who are, you know, mixed up at the best of times, and I was certainly a bit strange when I was growing up, I think a game like this could have a major influence. And experts are talking about it. Not all the experts can be wrong, can they?
We should bring back Jet Set Willy. And get the kids playing Manic Miner. That's what they need.
But come on, you've got to admit, would you want your... If your children were 14 years old, would you want them playing this game?
No, I wouldn't let them.
18?
Yeah, 18. They're adults. They can do what they want. Probably 17, possibly 16, I'd let them have a go without my wife knowing. But,
yeah, but you're saying to me there's nothing wrong with this game, but you wouldn't want your children playing it.
No, because it's not designed for children. It's an adult game. It's adult-themed. I wouldn't let my 14-year-old son watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, although he'd probably sneak off and watch it somewhere else. I wouldn't let him watch, you know... It's an adult-themed game in the same way that...
I'm not saying that, but you could say alcohol's for adults. How many young kids drink alcohol? How many young kids smoke? How many young kids play these video games? They're always going to get their hands...
Well, of course, though. What are you saying then, Justin, that we should ban alcohol? I'm confused.
I'm not saying we should ban alcohol. I'm just saying that a lot of people that have made comment on this particular game would say that it is too violent. And that's even 18-year-olds
that are saying it's too violent. I'm a grown man. If I want to play a violent video game in the privacy of my own home, I should be allowed to, shouldn't I?
But we're not talking about 40-year-old men. We're talking about young kids that could be influenced by a computer game.
I've got an idea, Justin, and this will solve everything.
Go on.
Let's ban young kids. Do you think?
No, I don't think we should ban young kids.
I was offering you an olive branch there. You can stick that... Anyway, Justin, lovely to talk to you.
And you.
See you later. Ta-ta. Oh, look, proper argument there between myself and Mr. Dealey. He was getting angry. This is going to continue in the office, I guarantee it. This week I had a call to the show, and it was the best call I've ever taken whilst working in radio. And I'm not saying any more than that. And just to add suspense, I'll play it to you after we hear our political reporter, Paul Scoynes, laughing at a dog.
Picture. There's a picture of a dog.
And now back to the best call I've ever had on Three Counties Radio. After you hear Catherine Boyle off the news cheer on Luton Town Football Club. And now back to the best call I've ever heard on BBC Three Counties Radio. After you've heard Justin Dealey saying something out of context.
Justin Dealey.
OK, here it is, the best phone call I've ever taken. It's not the best, but it's quite good. Paul's in Elstree. Morning, Paul.
Hello there. Hello. Oh, well.
Hello. Well. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was just phoning about to say that I just think the whole thing now has got ridiculous in terms of how sensitive people are to this issue. To me, I'm of an era where if you patted your secretary on the shoulder or something because she did a good job, and now somebody would say you're sexually harassing her in the office place, it all seems a bit bizarre.
Let's try and find... May I ask how old you are, sir?
Well, I'm in my 60s.
You're in your 60s. OK, because I do think that's relevant in this. Let's try and find some boundaries. Would you have a problem with calling a woman love?
I would more likely say my dear, but no, love wouldn't worry me at all.
My dear, my love. Some people... OK. And you say your female secretary, if she does a good job typing up her shorthand that she's taken from your dictation, you would pat her on the shoulder and say, well done, my dear.
Yeah, I mean, I drew a limit to having her sit on the lap or something. I always thought that was a bit... going too far, but
did that happen then? Back in the day,
in my office, it would do on occasions when we were having kind of whiskey on a Friday afternoon or something, and things got a bit more familiar. But but generally, it was not acceptable. But certainly, if the secretary went off to get you a nice cup of coffee or something, you know, it wasn't meant as some sort of sexist rival battle going on. It was just the norm for that environment of that era.
It feels like I'm in an episode of Mad Men. So, having never had a proper job and certainly never worked in the 70s or the 80s, so on a Friday afternoon, what line of business are you in? Don't need to give any company names, but what kind of business were you in?
Well, this was to do with a legal situation.
Okay, so in a legal office on a Friday afternoon, you've solved a few cases, you've got a few people off, you've sent a few naughty people down. You'd all get the gentlemen would all get the whiskey out, and the secretaries would sit on their laps.
On occasions, but it wasn't a norm. It wasn't kind of expected on the part of their job description, but it was just... It was familiarity of a different era.
A little...
Now frowned upon, I think.
A little back rub?
I suppose so. Yes, a kind of massage if somebody feels a bit tight on their shoulders or something because they've been tense over a typewriter or something. I don't know. It was all part of the office atmosphere. It wasn't... people being harassed in that sense. It was just...
A pat on their bottoms.
I've seen it, but I'm not personally considered that's particularly a good idea. But
dropping a pencil so they have to bend over and pick it up.
Well, that's happened. Yes, that's happened. Yeah. It depends. You know, if it's a lady of a certain era, you probably wouldn't bother. But if it was somebody of another era, then perhaps some of the younger colleagues might have thought that was a good little wheeze to enjoy.
My dear, I've dropped a pencil over there. Would you mind picking it up for me?
Well, that's it. You know, they were grateful. Those secretarial jobs, they enjoyed doing it. There were perks to it. It was all part of life. Mm. It wasn't to them enough.
And do you think, Paul, that we've got a little bit too sensitive these days?
Far too sensitive. Yeah. Everybody seems to be on a knife edge about something or another. Everybody seems to want to make an issue of things, which it seems unnecessary. I mean, everybody should know their limits and their boundaries, and if somebody's uncomfortable with the situation, you don't do it.
What do you think? Just final question, because we're running out of time. I'm finding this absolutely fascinating. I'm not judging you in the slightest. I'm genuinely finding this fascinating.
Well, I'm sure in show business you're much the same, aren't you, really?
Well, I'll see if producer Tara will sit on my lap later on in the week after a few whiskies.
Try it out.
Let's ask her. Producer Tara, what are the chances of us sharing a whiskey after Friday's show and then you just popping on my lap?
I don't like whiskey.
It's not a complete no, is it, Paul?
No, you noticed that. It wasn't anything to do with sitting on the lap.
No.
It was only about a particular drink.
Finally, Paul, what do you think that these secretaries were saying in the typing pool about the your colleagues who were indulging in this behaviour?
Well, they probably thought, well, that'd be good for a meal.
What did I tell you, huh? Interesting. It's like an oral history. Here's a woman talking about pants and badgers. Good morning to you, young lady.
Good morning. I spoke to you last Monday morning.
What were we talking about?
Badgers.
Oh, badgers. Oh, badgers. Oh, you never sent us pictures.
Oh, we did.
We didn't get them. No, you didn't.
Right. All right, we'll get them off to you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you're lucky you're allowed back on after that faux pas.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, for those of you, Angelina was at a badger protest. They had to dress in black and paint their faces white.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. And then poor old badgers, they're still getting gunned down, you know, so let's keep on supporting the badgers.
Yeah, well.
In the meantime,
yes.
Pants.
Yes.
Yes, Fashion Week. Now, I think you've missed the idea, young man, haven't you?
What the idea is a load of idiots walking around in clothes that nobody's ever going to buy and then patting themselves on their backs.
You're going to get into so much trouble for that and you know
with,
it,
with
don't
a bunch
you?
Of fashion designers, I could have them in a fight.
I know, but you see, the thing is, OK, that you know, like Vauxhall, etc., make prototypes of cars.
Yes.
Well, the same with these fashion designers. Good old Stella McCartney also is backing the ban on the cull and doesn't want the badgers killed.
Hang on a minute.
Good old Stella McCartney.
Well, of course, her dad's a veggie. But how is that got... How are you trying... You can't tie that in with London Fashion Week.
Because I was going to say, Ian, if you get some designer pants with your name on them, as long as you get the badges on them, we'll buy them.
Just to annoy you now, Angelina, I'm going to put a picture of a badger with a shotgun in its head. On my pants.
No, you mustn't do that.
On my pants.
That's really contentious.
On my pants.
You wouldn't want the poor little badgers to be killed now, would you?
I have to be impartial.
So please be good, Ian, and please be nice about the badgers and let's stop killing them.
Okay,
please.
Angela. Thank you, Angelina. Thank you very much indeed. Angelina in Bedford there. I'm not quite sure how she managed to. Hands up, who understood the last two phone calls? Anyone? No. Justin Dealey.
Hello, Ian. You're right there.
Yeah, I've got no idea what's going on. The show. Is this one of those dreams where you dream a whole day's work and then you wake up and go, oh, no, I've got to do a whole day's work again? Because this is what it feels like.
It's been a bizarre one. And do you know what? These people that sponsor animals, such as badgers and lions and things like that, okay. But people out there who do sponsor these animals. Now, let's just say that. Okay, you come face to face with a lion and he's about to eat you and you say, no, hang on, yeah. I've sponsored you. Is he going to take any notice? No, he's not.
Here's the thing. These are genuine facts, OK? Yeah. How do you stop an alligator or a crocodile, not being racist, from eating you?
To play a Des O'Connor song, maybe?
No, seriously, it's not the punch. It's not the punch. Hang on, the team next door, Catherine and Kelly Betts, you're saying a punch to the face,
punch
are you?
No. Conk.
Yes.
No, it's not. You get a plank of wood, a piece of wood, a branch, and you put it in its mouth so its jaw stays open.
Where'd you get that from?
Well, you'll probably be in a swamp or a forest, so that's where you get it from.
punch him in the nose while you get in the
OK, tree. This one's for you, Justin, then we'll let these two lose... the production team come in. How do you stop a shark from eating you?
I know what to do there. You hit it on the nose.
That's it. That's the one you punch on the nose. It's a shark.
Yep.
It's hard to punch underwater, so you've got to try and tempt it out of the water. You smack it on the nose. Well, look, the shark goes, oh, flipping it. I'm having none of this. I'm going to go and.
So you're saying to me, if I tried that with a crocodile or an alligator, they'd say, no, wrong species.
Yeah, you want to be doing that with a shark. I need a bit of wood in my mouth.
Here's a fact for you. Sharks don't actually like the taste of human flesh. They think we are a giant fish. So that's why they normally take one bite and one bite only.
Just one bite is all it takes, though, Justin.
But I'm just saying they don't like the taste of human flesh.
How do you stop a dog? If a dog has got his mouth on your arm and he won't let go of it, how do you get him to let go?
Pull its tail.
So, Kelly?
The bum.
You put a finger up its backside. It's true.
Kelly probably does that for fun anyway.
Okay, for goodness sakes, come on now, please. I don't want to get sacked from this job as well. I've lasted here just over a year, and while that may be a world record for me, I'd like to stay a little bit longer. I spoke to a gentleman called James Shaddock. I do worry if Mr. Shaddock is taking things perhaps a little bit too far. We clashed over some of the behaviour he thinks is inappropriate.
I think sexism and sexual harassment can be a very subjective thing, and what one person may see as harassment or inappropriate behaviour, another may not. But it's about creating a system of accepting consent, and accepting that your behaviour may have a negative impact on someone. So, for example, if you are meeting someone you may have never met before, then it is inappropriate to, you know, lean in and hug them or touch them in a way that may make them feel uncomfortable.
Hang on, are we saying the hug is now inappropriate when you meet someone?
No, what I'm saying is that hugging someone that you may not have met before is inappropriate.
What? No, now we're getting confusing, and I would suggest that's a little bit silly. So meeting someone you've never met before, going in for the hug is inappropriate?
Yes.
Really? Why?
Yes, I think because it will make the individual feel uncomfortable.
In your opinion?
In the individual who's being hugged. So
well, not always. In your opinion, it makes the individual feel uncomfortable. I know examples of when it doesn't make the individual.
Several of the individuals who spoke at the Fringe meeting said that they found that was inappropriate, that, you know, it was inappropriate for, other individuals who they'd never met before to greet them for the first ever time by...
What about the kiss?
...putting their arm around them. Well, that's fine with someone who you are on that level of a connection with.
The kiss on the cheek when you're introduced to someone, is that appropriate?
No.
James, I have to suggest that you are taking this much too far. It's now common in this, I mean, it's a European thing that's come over here. It's now common to kiss people on the cheek when you're introduced to them.
Yes, but not for complete and utter strangers.
Yes,
that you've never
yes, James, it is.
Before.
It is, I'm afraid. It really is.
Hmm. Well, you know, that may be what you believe. However,
James,
it's
what happens. It's what happens. I've seen it happen. I've had it done to me.
Yeah,
I've done
but
it to people.
Makes the individual uncomfortable.
Well,
what
then,
if that individual is made to feel uncomfortable and feels like someone has acted inappropriately towards them?
Well, then they are entitled to their feelings, but I'm afraid that the majority of people, I believe, would not think that the kiss on the cheek or even the double kiss, which is now very, very common practice in all walks of life, when you are introduced to somebody, is not inappropriate. Listen,
that is not your judgment to make. That is the judgment of the victim.
James, listen, a pat on the bum, or, you know, a cheeky wink, a touch on the shoulder, yes, that's probably inappropriate. But you cannot say that the double kiss, often the air kiss, is inappropriate. Who gives you the right to say that?
It's about making sure that there's a standard where no one can feel threatened.
So what do? We just go up to each other and we don't touch each other in any way whatsoever? No handshake?
No.
No,
you can still offer the handshake, and as one of the speakers at our Fringe said, that is exactly what she does with people that she's never met before. She immediately offers her hand to avoid people or hugging her inappropriately, leaning in for an inappropriate kiss, or doing any other touch that she deems inappropriate. Because it's up to the individual on the receiving end to judge.
Well, if someone goes in for the kiss, James, and they don't want it, then the person pulls away. That's all they need to do. I'm afraid that you are incredibly out of touch if you do not think that a kiss or a double kiss is now pretty much the normal greeting for someone you're just meeting.
I would say that you're actually the one who is out of touch, and actually what you're putting across is a point of view that actually is seen as very much outdated by a large
James, not at all. It's not outdated. It's quite a recent introduction, I would say, within the last 5, 6, 7 years. So I'm not coming from some 70s, you're all right, love, pat on the bum background. I'm coming from a modern, sensitive background.
No, I'd still say that what you're still describing does make people feel uncomfortable, and that is why.
Well, in your opinion,
we need to make sure that we have a way of behaviour, especially within the realms of politics and public life, where people do that with people they've never met.
Okay,
before.
So let's.
So this is appropriate with someone that you may already have that level of connection with, but it's not appropriate with someone that you've never met before.
In your opinion, James, it's not appropriate. Now,
in the opinion of many others.
Okay, well, look, James, listen. You've brought up the opinion line. So, in the opinion of many others, it is appropriate. What's the James Shaddock way of meeting somebody then? What should we all be doing?
We should just be basically responding to the body language.
Tell me what to do, James, because I'm obviously completely out of touch. I obviously completely don't get it. So, what's the James Shaddock way of greeting somebody you've never met so that everybody feels comfortable?
I normally just offer them my hand. And offer to shake their hand.
Wow. Okay.
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Johnny. What can I do for you?
I think that you were a little too categorical in the way you said parents don't love their children who send them to boarding schools. I think you might find that some parents who love their children send them to boarding schools because their profession and their devotion to the community doesn't allow them enough time with their children during term time.
What do you mean by profession and devotion to the community? Par exemple.
I was a surgeon, so I was on call, did many, many hours work. My children asked at 11 to go to boarding school.
Oh dear.
So that there was continuity.
How sad
they
for them.
They loved it because they were weekly boarders. They came home every weekend. It meant that at the weekend, we enjoyed ourselves. All the homework, all exam revision was done. And it suited my children and it's suiting my grandchildren because
Janet,
my children are doing the
Janet,
same thing very
it's,
well.
It suited you. It suited you to send your children away for a week at a time.
To go away.
But at the age of 11, where did they get the idea that they would be better off?
Because they were
at boarding school.
Where there were day pupils and boarders. And they thought it was much better rather than going to school at 7:30 in the morning and sort of staying at school till 5 or 6 at night. It was better to be there all the time. So they were part of the continuity with everybody else.
What's this got to do? You mentioned devotion to community. I don't quite understand what that's got to do with this.
If you are going to spend many years at the government's expense training in medicine, you have an obligation to pay back the community.
No, if you go to the expense and the trouble of having children, you have a responsibility to those children above everything else, don't you?
My responsibility was to see they were taken care of in a proper manner.
No, your responsibility is for you to take care of them in a proper manner. You are their mother.
And they preferred boarding school.
At the age of 11, they're not old enough to make that decision, Janet.
Indeed they are. I now have a 9-year-old grandson at boarding school.
Oh, that's so sad.
He wanted to go because his brothers were there and he's in the same family house with them.
I think it's so sad to
it
have...
It doesn't mean we don't love them.
I think it's so sad to have the wonderful gift of children, and they are a gift. They are so precious. And then to say, yeah, do you know what? I don't want to spend all my time with you. I don't want to put you to bed at night. I don't want to read your stories. I don't want to cook your supper. I don't want to clean up your mess. I don't want to wipe your bottoms. I'm going to let somebody else do that. I think that's so sad.
Heaven, you're not doing any of those things either.
You're not reading stories and cooking meals for them. You should be.
By 11, most of my grandchildren can cook my meals when they visit me.
Oh, Janet, I just, you know, no disrespect. It sounds awful.
I think you'll find we make very rounded adults.
Oh, it just sounds...
get on very well with other people.
You make very rounded adults who think that it's appropriate to send their children away because they're caught in that cycle. One of the joys of having children is living with them and being with them and arguing with them and sending them up to their rooms and playing with them and teaching them how to ride their bikes and reading with them and watching films with them and cuddling up in bed with them. And you were denied that. I feel really sorry for you, Janet. You were denied that.
Please don't feel sorry for me.
I do, because you've missed out on so many wonderful things by not having your children live with you.
I think most of the things you're talking about are done before 11.
You can do all of those things with 11-year-olds. You can get into bed with your 11-year-old. You can read them stories. You can watch films with them. You can cook for them. You can do all of those things. It's a joy and it's a gift and it's a privilege watching your children grow up and being part of their lives. You denied yourself that, Janet.
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't agree with you. I think that within a community, you have a responsibility to the community as well as your family.
No, your family come first. Your family
Your family don't always come first.
Your children come first. I really think
they
do.
I'm afraid they don't always come first. You must equate what is the most important thing. And very often, the community is more important. Because having brought your children up properly, they are disciplined, they are rounded people, and can well look after themselves when many members of the community can't.
I would strongly disagree. I would suspect a lot of people would as well, that my children come above and beyond everything.
I hope your children are very successful in life and very happy.
Well, I thank you very much. That's very kind. But again, I reiterate, my children are more important to me than anything, more important than this job, more important than other members of my family, more important than my community. Of course they're more important.
So if they're more important than your job,
yep,
then how are you going to provide with them, for them, if you didn't have a job?
Well, no, I have a job. What I'm saying is, if for some reason, due to illness or whatever other reason, I had to leave this job to be with them... If I got an email now saying your kids are sick, I would be out of here now. You would hear me put the headphones down and I would walk out without a moment's hesitation.
My children would bring up Granny and say, would you deal with it, please?
OK, but supposing that situation isn't possible. You know, if I got an email saying your children are sick, you have to come home now. The last sound you would hear is me putting my headphones down, walking out of that door and that door shutting.
You are to be congratulated.
Thank you. I know.
But I don't agree with you, and I don't think...
You think a radio show is more important than the health of my kids? Wow. Janet, it's nice talking to you. Thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
So the end of the world is coming. Not till after the rest of the podcast, so stay where you are, or keep moving. In fact, it's not going to happen until 3 billion years' time, and I'm going to be well old by then. Ron called in, though, and said that he thinks it'll be sooner because of the moon.
We all know it's getting hotter, and 3 billion years is a long way away. But
yes,
the Earth rotates together with the moon.
Correct.
And we know the moon is moving away extremely fast.
Sorry?
Now, the moon is moving away...
Where?
About 10% away from the Earth.
What, every year?
Every year it moves about 3 millimetres.
Oh.
Consequently, if the moon moves away, so the Earth will go into a little bit of a wobble. Consequently, the moon and the Earth are engaged together. The guy who came on regarding the sun,
yes,
had he brought in the question of the moon in relationship to the Earth, because you see, the Earth has to balance with something. So the moon is the correct weight to hold the Earth in orbit. So it would have been interesting had he have brought in the moon as well.
He didn't bring in the moon, did he, Ron?
No, he didn't, and he should have done. Naughty man.
Very naughty man. Now, 3 millimetres a year. How do we know this, Ron?
No, the experts tell us that the moon is moving away at... If the moon moves away by 10%...
Yes.
Then the world will go into a wobble, and that's the end of it.
But how many?
No. I would have thought the moon and the Earth moving in tandem wouldn't have been affected by the by the moon. But the Earth needs something to balance.
How many millimeters makes 10%?
I have no idea.
Oh, Ron! So hang on a minute. It might just be It might be 9 millimetres.
The interesting part is the 10%.
Yes, but we don't know what that means. It's useless without the information as to how many percent per year it's moving.
Yes, but we weren't able to find that out. Consequently, this guy who knows all about the Earth and the Sun and the Moon, everything, he didn't mention the Moon. So would you get him back, please?
No, I don't think so. Ron, there's going to be, I believe, I'm not sure if this is... Well, no, I've heard this is true. There's going to be a television game show where you can win a trip to Mars. It's a one-way trip to Mars. Mm-hmm. I think it takes about 4 years to get there. It's a one-way trip to Mars. There's no coming back. You're going to die in space. Would you enter something like that, Ron?
Well, if you had appendicitis when you've just taken off.
What? Sorry?
What if you had an appendicitis if you'd just taken off?
You'd have to do what I saw in a television drama once. You'd have to take your own appendix out.
Yeah, but where would you put the body?
Your body?
Well, I'm dead. I'm on this blooming thing going away.
Well, no, hang on. You've gone from appendicitis to dying already. You might be able to remove the appendix.
Yeah, well, just imagine that I die just as we take off. Where the devil are you going to put the dead body? Are you going to throw it out?
No. Do you know what we do?
What?
I'd eat you.
Goodbye, sir.
Thank you very much. That's it. That's your lot. Thanks very much for downloading and listening. A new one comes out every week. They only stay online for 30 days. So this will be, in 31 days' time, a collector's item. Maybe you could share it and trade it with your friends. Like, I don't know, a Pokemon. You can listen to me live every weekday morning between 6 and 9 on BBC Three Counties Radio. Or you can go to the BBC iPlayer, type in my name, I'm not telling you what it is, and look for me there. If you want to get in touch, you can send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Thanks to Kelly Betts.
For what? But
that's what I was wondering. Ta-ta.
Thanks for listening to this free download from BBC Three Counties Radio, your local radio station for beds, hearts and bucks, on FM, AM, digital radio and online at bbc.co.uk/threecounties.